Buccaneers fans, here he is, Ira Kaufman, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. He's the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. Plenty to talk about. I hope we're going to bring some fresh stuff to the listeners, Ira, because you've been busy at One Buck Place. We've been diving into some of these things, and also in this episode, we'll include an interview with Dave Canales and Tony Grossi, a guy in the media, an old pal of yours, more of a comrade from Cleveland, who is a Hall of Fame voter, and he is a guy who wasn't a big fan of Baker Mayfield, so we're going to get some perspective there, which I think folks will be think is pretty cool, Ira, and but we have plenty of Buck stuff to talk about, and there's also madness going on, absolute madness at Bill Curry Ford, $12,000 off MSRP on remaining new 2023 Fords, $12,000 off. Everything's got to go to make room for all the 24s. View the inventory online right now at BillCurryFord.com. Look at those 2023s. And you can get up to $12,000 off. GM Sean Sullivan, Ira, on top of that, he's got the Ira Kaufman discount. And there is also, if you don't want a 2023 and you want to order a vehicle, they have their easy concierge ordering system. It's online. And bottom line, Sean Sullivan will give you $500 just to do it. A nice gift card just to order a vehicle. There's no deposit. Check out everything at BillCurryFord.com. The giant is back. The dealership is, with all the bells and whistles and way more than that, is open a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on the east side. Now, how about that, Ira? $12,000 off.
Steve, I drove past the dealership yesterday on my way to One Buck Place, going south on Dale Mabry, right there on the left side, a little north of Hillsboro. It looks spectacular, Steve. Absolutely spectacular. They laid out a ton of money for this remodel. It was a massive undertaking, and the service department, you're not going to find a facility like this anywhere else, I don't think. State-of-the-art, Sean Sullivan took the best ideas from a lot of dealerships. He traveled around, out of state. He discarded the bad ideas and embraced the good ones and utilized all of them, and he designed this thing, and I got to tell you, Steve, it was well worth the wait. If you go there, you're going to be knocked out. BillCurryFord.com.
Yeah, I think you actually traveled to Portugal, Ira, to look at a dealership there and met some of your fans. A bizarre story. We'll get to that another time. All right, Sage, bottom line, disaster strikes. You got to be ready. So you have a plan. This is the time of year where people start thinking of the hurricane plan, but this happens year-round. Flood, fire, mold, storm damage, whatever it is you call Florida's elite restoration immediately. Do not wait. Do not delay. 24/7. Call them up. Insurance companies, Ira, they require that you mitigate your issue right away. If you call up your insurance company and say, yeah, this mold got worse. I saw it a couple of months ago and, I want to make a claim. You're in big trouble. You don't want to go this alone because you're going to get ripped off by insurance companies. There's a lot of corruption and you got to be protected. So you got to call Florida's Elite Restoration. They'll come out and give you a free evaluation immediately. If you proceed with them and you let them know first, hey, I heard you on Ira Kaufman's podcast, they'll give you $500 back just for letting them know that. And so that's pretty cool. So you get your free evaluation. If you need them, you can get $500 back. If you don't need them, great. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Get there immediately. We'll talk more about Big Storm Beer later. Ira, Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast's tap rooms in Odessa, Ybor City upstairs in Centro Ybor, Clearwater on 49th Street, and of course at the Amway Center in Orlando. All right, Ira, Lee is here, and I've got a big question for you right now to kick this thing off because it's really the most important question in Buccaneers land. Saturday afternoon, as we sit here, Baker Mayfield becomes a free agent for all intents and purposes on Monday, where he can talk with other teams, reach an agreement with another team, and the reality is, does this mean, in your mind, do you think the sides are far apart? Or do you think that they're nickel and diamond over a couple little numbers here, maybe a little guaranteed money? What do you think is going on? Because where I sit, Ira, I kind of think that they're far apart right now because otherwise it would be done.
I think there's some anxiety in the building. Lee and I were there yesterday, you know, and I don't want to parse Jason Light's words, but I wouldn't say there's concern, Lee, but I think there's a sense and a growing sense, Lee, from the Buck perspective, they don't have total control, Lee, over this situation. They don't. It's not, you know, Antoine Winfield with a franchise tag. It's not where you, you know, you have the power. You have hand. I think there's some anxiety that Baker Mayfield and his representatives at this point want to see what his value is on the open market. There's nothing the Bucs could do about that if that is the perspective of the Mayfield camp. And Jason Light said several times yesterday, you know, and Mike Evans seconded it, Mayfield's got to do what's best for Mayfield. So I still think Light is confident that this thing's going to get done, even if it doesn't get done by Monday. I think they can corral Mayfield back to one Buck place. But, Lee, you've said it many times. Once Monday comes, it's a new ballgame. There's the Steelers. There's the Falcons. There's the Raiders. There's the Broncos. Vikings, you know, depending on what happens with Kirk Cousins. There will be suitors for Baker Mayfield, Lee. I still think it's going to happen. But I think Steve's point's interesting. Lee, it hasn't happened yet. And it looks at this point like he's at least going to get out there on Monday and see what his value is.
And I don't blame him for that. I really don't. You know, people get mad at me. I've stated this on Twitter and on the website, Joe Bucks Fan. And people get mad at me when I say this. But I think Mayfield's camp wants to see what Cousins gets.
There's some linkage there, Lee. Now, I will say this, Lee. Now, facts are the facts. Baker Mayfield does not have the body of work of Kirk Cousins. Like, he doesn't. But he's got an age factor, and he's not coming off a serious injury. So you got to put it into context. But Kirk Cousins has been a pretty darn good quarterback, Steve, over a number of years. And Mayfield has not. I don't think the Bucs are going to break the bank for Mayfield. But if he's reasonable, I think they're going to reel him back in.
Here's a funny one for you, Ira. I know you like quarterback wins. Mayfield has twice as many postseason wins as Kirk Cousins.
He's played a lot less games than Kirk Cousins. You could say, well, he had a pretty good Cleveland team around him back then and you know, a pretty good Bucks team. You could argue that all you want. But the fact is, Lee, the last two games that Mayfield played after playing some lousy games towards the end of the regular season, especially the Saints debacle in the next to last game, Lee, he played very well in the postseason, and that's the lasting impression for Todd Bowles, Jason Light, and, as I throw it over to Hisbits, Steve, that is the lasting impression for the Glazers about Baker Mayfield. Three touchdowns against Philly, three touchdown passes against Detroit, 400-plus yards against the Lions. The Buck offense didn't lose that game, Steve. The fourth quarter, the Buck defense fell apart, but Mayfield played very well in that game.
Sage, is it fair to say that Kirk Cousins' body of work or any other quarterback's body of work just doesn't really matter? It really just comes down to who wants Mayfield and what they're interested in paying him? I don't really think anything else matters than that.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, Steve, because in free agency, as it should be, Lee, it's not what you've done, but it's what you're going to do for the team that signed you. And going forward, I would put more money on Mayfield over the next 3 or 4 years, Lee, than I would Kirk Cousins. And I think so that's what drives a free agency. You know, body of work's nice, but what's your age? What's your injury situation? And can I count on you? Mayfield stands to make a ton of money. Is he going to make it with the Bucks or not? Jason Light's not as confident as I thought he was in Indianapolis, but I think he still thinks he could do this.
Yeah, you know, for all the good teams the Vikings have had, you know, what, the last 8 years since Cousins have been here, they've had some really good teams. They've always choked in the playoffs. I mean, regularly choked. Cousins especially. And we all know about the Kirk Cousins primetime game. I think he's, what, won 2 primetime games in his career? When you see Kirk Cousins on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football or Thursday Night Football, you don't bother watching because you know what the outcome already.
Sage, you mentioned Jason Light not being as confident. And if Jason Light had a blank check from ownership, I think he'd be very confident. So where do the Glazers factor in here? And why do you think they did not franchise Baker Mayfield, which would give everybody all the confidence in the world? Was it because they wanted Winfield more? Was it because the Glazers said, we're not paying this guy $35 million a year? No way. On the franchise tag and setting ourselves up for him having a good year and then getting a 20% increase next year. Why did this go down this way, Ira?
You know what I'm starting to think, just trying to read the tea leaves here on this Mayfield tricky situation. Lee, it might not be how much he's making each year in this next contract, but Lee, it might be the structure of the contract and where the Bucks wouldn't be fully committed to him for 4 years. And I don't blame him if that's the case. I don't blame the franchise, even though I think their options are very limited. Let's face it. Yeah, I know Kyle Trask's in the building. We'll talk about him later, Lee. But they're picking 26, and, you know, you don't know if Penix is going to be there or Bo Nix or whatever. You don't know. You know, they're not picking sixth. Yeah, I think it's the structure. I think that's the hang-up more than the money. That's just my read on the situation.
I absolutely agree. You know, it's some technicality. That's my guess. I think they might be in the same ballpark. You know, I'll just reiterate what you said, Ira. And Indianapolis, the light felt absolutely confident. You saw his mood. He was laughing and joking, and it sure seemed like, you know, everything was gonna fall into place. I sure didn't get that impression yesterday. I'm not saying he seemed scared, but he seemed a lot less confident. I get the impression that he thinks he can get it done, but he's, as you said, he's not nearly as confident as what he was in Indianapolis. There's a sense of doubt that seems to be creeping in with him.
Yeah, Steve, I think maybe the signals from Mayfield camp are strong and direct. This is not going to, you know, this is not a snap re-signing him. He will have suitors in free agency. And they think they have the upper hand, Steve. And just looking at it as objective as we can be, even though the name of this thing is Joe Bucks Fan, we are objective. Who's got the leverage, Steve? I think Mayfield does. Fans don't necessarily agree with that, but that's the way I look at it. I think it's Mayfield's call, and Jason Light mentioned that several times. You know, he's going to do what's best for him, but they're going to make him a damn good offer, because I think the Glazers, Steve, I think they're the ultimate arbiters of this thing, and they're going to make the call. It's not going to be Bowles. It's not going to be Greenberg. It's not going to be Svitek. And I don't even think it's going to be Jason Light. When it comes to the guy under center going forward, the Glazers will make the call, Steve. And it all depends on how this contract is structured. Yeah, they want him back, Steve. There's no question about it. But under their terms, kind of. And we'll see if that can happen.
Well, Sage, the first two things. One, don't call me objective. I'm not objective, Ira. Stop it. I try at times, but come on. I want to see the Bucks win. I want to see. I'm going to tell you if I hate a guy. That's how it is. So I'm checking out of the objectivity part of this.
But you're also a realist, Steve. You're a realist, and you realize to say that Baker Mayfield's going to take a huge hometown discount. Lee, we don't know that. You know, why should we think that? Why?
Well, I don't understand that theory in general. Why should players take a discount? They have a very limited amount of time in their life to get this kind of money. Why should they take hometown discounts? I don't understand that. Yeah, you know?
I think
on sign a 1 year contract and you think you're going to win a Super Bowl. But okay, I sort of get that. But I just don't understand this hometown discount. I mean, whoever says that, whatever job they're at, would you tell them, okay, you got to take a 40% cut in pay just because? Hell no, they wouldn't do it. So why should we think players should do it? I don't get that.
I'm glad Lee brought this up because it brings an interesting question for the Sage. So Ira, let me flash you back to 2009. Okay, 2009. Sage gets a phone call, picks it up, and says, "Ira speaking," and it's the Tampa Bay. It's the Tampa Bay Times, and they're offering you 25% more money than you got from the Tribune. Are you going to give the Tribune a hometown discount, or are you leaving?
Well, I've already proven that, Steve, because in 1984, when I was working for UPI in New York, I'd been there for 8 years, and I tried to get transferred to Tampa, couldn't do it during the whole year of 84. And somebody came, you know, in September and said, hey, I'll give you a $10,000 raise. That was a lot of money back then. And we're starting up this company. And you know what I did, Steve? I bolted. You got to do what's right for you. I think Lee's making a very good point, Steve. We got to put ourselves in the Mayfield camp for a moment. Steve, this is his opportunity to cash in. This is his opportunity. That's the way he's thinking. He's coming off a very good season, and he handled job priority number one as far as Todd Bowles is concerned, ball security, and he handled it in exemplary fashion. The Bucs were among the leaders in turnover differential. That matters to Todd Bowles. So I know I said the Glazers are going to make the final call, but Todd Bowles is going to make an impassioned plea to keep this guy. Impassioned, because as Lee always mentioned, he's coaching for, you know, his coaching career. He is. Say what you want about the Bucs, 4 years in a row in the playoffs. I think they're one game over 500 or one game under 500 in the last 2 years when you count the playoffs. Let's see, they were 8-10 and then they were 10-9. So they're under 500 the last 2 years. I think the Glazers want to keep this thing going. This is not 2009. Steve mentioned 2009. It's all about the arc of the franchise and how owners look at it, Lee. 2009, they figured this team had made its run. It's time to retrench. Goodbye, Derek Brooks. Goodbye, Ike Hilliard. Goodbye, Cato June. We're starting fresh. I don't think they feel that that's the situation, Lee. It's not. So to go to Kyle Trask and say, let the chips fall where they may, I don't think that's where the Glazers are. They want this thing done, but within reason. And I think if Mayfield's reasonable, this thing will get done within the next few days.
So, Ira, you've put this thing on the Glazers' plate here. There's silver platter, or maybe it's a platinum or something. Sage, their best offer. Have they already said, this is our best offer, and you know, we love you, we want you, it's a good offer. And if it's not good enough for you, then you know, we trust you to test your thing, test your market, and you know, we'll talk to you soon. Has that already been done?
Here's my answer to that, Lee. Yes, they've said that, and no, that's not true. You know, you always start at the bottom, and the other side starts at the top. Hopefully, you meet somewhere in the middle. So if Jason Light is telling Mayfield's representatives, this is our best offer, that changes rather quickly. It's called the art of negotiation. And Light and Greenberg are very good at it. So as a rule, they don't lose players that they want to keep in free agency. Now, Lee, I asked somebody, and you were there when I asked, and I said, what about Whitehead a few years ago? You know, you say you don't lose players you want to. And you know what the answer was, Lee? Letting Whitehead go in free agency and signing with the Jets. You know what the answer was? We made a mistake. We made a mistake. That was the answer. Brutally honest. Brutally honest. The irony is, Lee, I think Whitehead's a free agent again. Yeah, the Jets just released him, and the Bucs sure need a safety next to Winfield. Now, I don't know, you know, what the contract details are, but I don't think Bowles would mind reuniting with Whitehead. I don't. It would give him a heck of a safety tandem. But, Lee, you were with me yesterday. Light was very circumspect in what he said regarding Mayfield. He's not panicking. There's no panic. But, Lee, you look around the landscape, number 26 pick in the draft. Who knows who's going to be out there? Cousins could re-sign with the Vikings. All it takes is, you know, one team making a crazy offer to Mayfield. I think it's incumbent to get this thing done before he hits free agency, Lee, but it's not going to be easy.
Well, Light did say something interesting yesterday, and he kind of said this at the combine, too, that, you know, when the legal tampering begins, by the way, I think that's a blurry line. Like, there's not tampering going on right now. I know it's illegal, quote unquote, but these guys, when legal tampering, when the bell rings for legal tampering on Monday, these guys have a really good idea who's going to pay what. They really do. And I thought that was very, very interesting that Light would say, you know, we have a good idea, and they have a good idea. But this begs the question, Ira. And I always thought Light was like the lead negotiator when it came to contracts. And he may still be. But how involved is Greenberg in negotiations? And the reason I ask that is, you heard that fantastic story that Light said. You know, he was at a bar drinking with Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. And he gets a phone call. He goes, Evans is coming back. Well, that begs the question. He wasn't the lead negotiator, or at least he wasn't that involved, because he was out at a bar, and one of his minions had to call him up and tell him. So how involved is Leighton in these negotiations?
Great point, Lee. Now, that was a fantastic story, that he's buddying up at the bar, and he didn't realize at the start who he was talking to, and it's the great one. That is a great story.
It's just so people didn't read the story, and there are people that listen to your podcast, Ira, that don't read Joe Buck's fan. Shame on them, but hey, that's life. Light was at John Cooper's
event. Yeah, he was at event, yeah.
And Light bellied up to the bar, and who was right next to him? Well, that was Wayne Gretzky. And they struck up a conversation. All of a sudden, Light gets a phone call, looks at his phone, he sees who it's coming from, and he excuses himself. I mean, now picture this. You're drinking with Wayne freaking Gretzky. And you get a phone call. It's got to be going through your mind. This better be freaking good, man. This better be a blankety blanky emergency. And so he excuses himself. He takes the call, and he Light said he couldn't remember who called him. It was Greenberg or Jackie Davidson. By the way, she hides. I've never seen her. So anyway, I don't know she exists. So this person, this individual named Jackie Davidson, Light didn't know if it was her or Greenberg that called him. Come on. Light gets the phone call. Hey, Evans, come back. Great. Light goes back to the bar. Gretzky's still there. He tells Gretzky Mike Evans is coming back. And Gretzky's response was, he's a great one.
Lee, great story, Lee. Well told. And very instructive in terms of, I'll say this, Steve. If Light's talking to Gretzky and his phone goes off and he looks down and it says Ira Kaufman, he ain't taking that call, Steve. He ain't taking it. And I don't blame him. It's Wayne freaking Gretzky, like
well,
they put it.
Well, wait, Ira, not even is he not taking the call. He's verbally, vocally saying, why the hell is Ira calling me again?
And he's cursing me out to Gretzky, you know. And by the way, I'm going to the Lightning game tonight. And the fact that Gretzky might still be in town, I'm hoping to see him and talking about Jason Light to Wayne Gretzky. But to Lee's point, Steve, very, very interesting. Greenberg, to answer the question, Greenberg is right in the middle of everything. And he should be. This guy is really sharp. He's really sharp. And I think people do him a disservice, Steve, by trying to put him in a straitjacket that he's the capologist and that's all he does. Now, he's really good at that, as is Jackie Davidson. But, Steve, he's involved in the negotiation process front and center. Front and center. And I'm guessing that it was Greenberg that called Light. Look, Light makes the final call on personnel, as he should. He's got the title. But Greenberg is right in the thick of the negotiations. He's involved with the Mayfield negotiations, McLaughlin, Levon A. David, and anybody else you want to mention. So Light has total trust in his brain trust. And I think it is very interesting that Light got the call and it wasn't Light that called Greenberg and said, we got Evans back. It was the other way around.
Well, Sage, I was going to give you a chance to flex your Joe Bucks fan reading comprehension skills, but you didn't really go there. About 6 days ago, Ira, I wrote a story. Light was on the Three and Out podcast, which is part of the Volume Network. And the funny part of the video of that podcast is that you and I and Lee are in the background of it because it's at the combine. And so, you know, if you don't want to focus in on Light and the host, you can stare at the Sage. But the host of that show is a former scout and he knows Light. And he said to Light, hey, you're a football guy. You're an X's and O's film dude. What's it like that you actually are now negotiating contracts? And Light did not hesitate. He was very clear. He said most negotiations are done by Greenberg and Jackie Davidson. And then he said, quote, they do most of the groundwork, most of the legwork. They ask me to come in at the end if we have to. I don't want to say I'm the closer, but you're the GM. And so he was very open about it.
That's great stuff. And guys, I don't know if you saw the video, but you guys don't miss anything. I believe Light was on Rich Eisen yesterday also. For about 20 minutes, Lee. And basically, you know, I looked at his body language and the way he phrased things, and it was kind of the same way he was during the Mike Evans press conference. He made no promises to Buck Nation that we're going to get this thing done. He said, we're going to give it our best shot. We want him back. But, Lee, it's not done till it's done. Now, look, I'm on record saying Mayfield's not going anywhere. I still believe that. And, Lee, I'm going to go back to one thing. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. The hiring of Liam Cohn and the re-signing of Mike Evans, to me, are shots over the bow that Mayfield's the next domino to fall. And they'll have other pieces after that with David and McLaughlin. But I just think Cohn and Evans are precursors to bringing Mayfield back.
I'm glad you brought up Rich Eisen's video. White's body language was terrible. You reminded me. I watched that last night. His body language was terrible, which was not a good sign. White's not a good poker player, so that was a bad look. Just his body language, that was not encouraging.
I think he's a little frustrated, Steve. I think White's a little frustrated with the Mayfield situation. I think he thought this thing was going to be done by now, and it's not. And the clock's ticking to Monday. Panic, no. Concern, yeah, there's concern, Steve.
Well, yeah, and that brings me to, I guess, a little bit of a conspiracy-type question. So we know that Jason Light, you know, he has no issues with media necessarily in general, other than he doesn't like the disrespect of the Bucks. But he's not one to just run around on a tour of the media and, hey, sure, I'll talk to you. So my question is, why does he do the Rich Eisen show when he knows that he's going to be hit with 5 minutes of Baker Mayfield questions? Is it possible that he's frustrated with the Glazers and the line in the sand that they've drawn? So he said, you know what? I'm going to go out there. I'll take Eisen's call. I'll do the show. I'll tell everybody who's listening we want him back. So maybe the Glazers squirm a little bit when they start to see that the world is starting to know that somebody here isn't willing to get this deal done. Maybe fans will blame me, but maybe they'll blame the Glazers like they have in years past.
That's possible, Steve, but I could look at it another way, Lee. And the fact that Light spent 15 minutes with the local media yesterday after the Evans press conference when he didn't have to. We've been to a lot of those press conferences in that auditorium, Lee, over the years, when it's over, it's over. And, you know, the Glazers hit the back room and Light goes to the back room and that's it. And you might get, you know, Rondé Barber standing there talking about the Hall of Fame or whatever, but everybody else is gone. So, Lee, to Steve's point, Light is making the rounds. He is. And while you could look at it as, you know, trying to put a little pressure on ownership to get this thing done and give the go-ahead, Lee, it also could be a signal that Light kind of knows that this thing's going to get done in the next 3, 4, 5 days. It depends how you want to look at it. I don't think he would put himself out there, Lee, if he didn't think this thing was going to get done.
You're right. I don't think Light would go out there if he thought it was going to cave. So that's a good point.
Steve, what did you think? And I know you, Steve, you might have dropped your coffee when you saw it because you were monitoring the press conference. Now, Steve, I don't know if there were cameras on when we had the little 15-minute segment with Light, but Lee, you were there, and I asked him directly. I think I phrased it like this, Steve. I said, Jason, I know you don't want to think about this, but there's a reality that this may not happen with Mayfield. It may not happen. You're not in total control. And if it doesn't happen, Jason, do you feel you have viable alternatives? It's a fair question, Steve. They don't want to dwell on not bringing Mayfield back, but they have to address it, right, Lee? They have to address it. Because ultimately, they don't totally control the situation. And I don't know if Steve saw a video of that or some transcript. But Steve, he mentioned door number two. And he said, in the words of Bruce Arians, you know. And I think he said, Lee, we have door number two right here. It was an obvious reference to Kyle Trask. And Lee, I'm just saying it again. Where this franchise is, winning a playoff game, being competitive in a second playoff game, almost reaching the NFC title game with a young roster, and you're bringing back key pieces like Winfield and Evans, and more to come, relying on Kyle Trask, 3 completions in his career, Lee, I just don't think that's feasible for the Glazers. I don't.
Well, it's interesting you say that, only because what are their options? There's not many options out there unless you're going to trade up 10 spots and try to get Penix or Bo Nix or whomever the apple of your eye is as quarterbacks. What else is there? I mean, are you going to be in the Kirk Cousins? I don't think Mayfield signs anywhere until Kirk Cousins does. I really don't. Outside of the maybe the Bucks, but as far as not factoring in the Bucks, I don't think Mayfield's going to sign anywhere until Kirk Cousins. I'm convinced that the quarterbacks, few that there are, they're waiting on Kirk Cousins. I mean, so outside of Cousins, if you're not going to draft a quarterback, that's all you got is Trask. I mean, there really isn't anything out there. Justin Fields, really? Sean Sullivan talks about this a lot. He's not exactly wrong. But this is what happened to the Bucks by making the playoffs. They screwed themselves out of possibly getting a good quarterback in the richest quarterback draft since 1983. They screwed themselves over by winning. Now, I'm not here to say they should have tanked. No, they shouldn't have. But by winning, they basically made their own bed. It's Mayfield or we crap the bed. And now we don't know if Mayfield's coming back. So if they don't re-sign Mayfield, they've absolutely crapped the bed. They don't have a quarterback and they can't get a quarterback. They're SOL.
And Steve, let me say one more thing. Buck fans might shut off this podcast, think I'm crazy. They're looking at number 26, an edge rusher, maybe a guard or a center. Steve, I just don't think it's crazy. Bringing Mayfield back on a contract that's well-structured from a Buck perspective and sitting at number 26, and there's a quarterback at 26 still on the board, whoever it is, that you believe in, that you think has a chance to develop, I'm taking him if you believe in that guy. And with the belief, Steve, that he doesn't play the first year, maybe the second year. I'm okay with it, Stevie, because I'm the only guy in this crazy market of ours that keeps saying, when are they going to draft and develop their guy under center on a rookie contract and then build around him? It's got to happen, Steve. It's got to happen one of these years.
Well, Sage, to try to answer Lee's question now, I don't disagree with you guys at all, but I think from the Glazer perspective, and if we accept what you're saying, Ira, if Mayfield is not signed, it has to do with ownership and maybe light if it was a crazy amount of money. But I think they might look at it and say, you know what? Let's do it again. Let's do what we did last year again. Let's pull a quarterback off the street and let's do this thing again. Let's fire it up. We'll have a lot more money to put pieces around him. And you know what? Let's bring Ryan Tannehill in here and let him compete with Kyle Trask. Tannehill's had good years. He had a Pro Bowl year. If you look at his last bunch of years, they're similar to Mayfield, the kind of thing. Let's do this. I don't know, but I think that they might actually think that way.
Nah, he's old, Steve. He's old. He's not as old as Cousins, but he's old. And he ain't 28 like Mayfield. I understand your point. I don't think Tannehill's the way to go. Lee, in my opinion.
No, of course not. I'm saying, but ownership might look at that as a plan B. Hey, we did it before with a guy who'll take $3-4 million plus some incentives, and we think we can win this division. I don't know.
Lee, if you do something like that and you take a journeyman, maybe Tannehill's a little better than a journeyman. If you do that, I think then you got to draft the quarterback. Go find somebody and let him sit for a year or two behind a veteran. To bring in Tannehill to compete with Trask and then not have, some guy that's a developmental quarterback, I don't see that as the smart move, Lee. I don't see it.
I agree with you in theory, Ira. The only catch is Liam Cohen going to be around when the next quarterback is starting?
You might extend that to Todd Bowles, right, Lee? You might.
The worst thing you can do with a rookie quarterback is flip coordinators after his rookie year. The history is brutal. That's why the Bucks hired Dirk Cutter. They wanted that consistency for James. If you're flipping coordinators every other year on a quarterback, young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, Mayfield's a good example. You're begging to screw up a massive investment, and that's why. defensive coaches in the second decade, the third decade of the 21st century, are it's very hard for defensive coaches to get head coaches. Owners see that. Owners want an offensive coach, an offensive coordinator to be a head coach where that guy's there for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, hopefully 10 years. That's exactly why that happens. So with Bowles being a head coach, face value, damn right I want the Bucs to draft a quarterback. But how do you keep Lean and Coleman here? In theory, it's great. In practicality, with how the Bucs are set up now, I don't know.
If they take a quarterback at 26 and not move up to try to move up to 10, which I think you'd have to pay an exorbitant price. I don't think the Bucs are doing that. And life values draft picks. He does, yeah, as he should. So, Lee, my point is, if you stick at 26 and there's a quarterback out there that you like, that you think has a chance, he's not going to play his first year, Lee. Not going to play his first year. I don't think Penix is ready. I think Penix is kind of a raw prospect, in my opinion. I think he'd be thrown to the wolves, sort of like Bryce Young last year. I think by the time he's ready to start, maybe year three, they should have either Bowles and Cone are still going to be there, or he'll start fresh with somebody else. But Steve, the quarterback they take at 26, if they take one, I don't think that guy plays this fall.
Wednesday, all day happy hour, Wings Wednesday at Big Storm Brewery in Ybor City. $1 wings. You got to order 8, but that's not a problem for you, Ira. I know you usually do your wings in multiples of 17. So $1 wings, Big Storm Brewery upstairs, Centro Ybor. They've got new beers with Big Storm right now, and of course the redesigned cans. But it's all about the taste, and you can see all the beers at bigstormbrewery.com. Tap rooms in Odessa, Clearwater on 49th Street in Orlando, at the Amway Center, at bigstormbrewery.com. You can see the full menus. Ira, I know how much you just love those Cuban sandwiches and the fries, and it is a beautiful thing. And of course, as I mentioned, the new beers are out. You can look at all the beers, bigstormbrewery.com. Follow them at social media. Each location has its own page, Facebook, Instagram. Get it done, Ira. Big Storm Brewery, the Bromosa, their Tangerine IPA. It's all over the place. Try it out. You will be hooked like the sage. And Bill Curry Ford, like we mentioned, Ira, $12,000 off 2023s. That is not a typo. Up to 12 grand off. Get to BillCurryFord.com today. Hey, no football on Sunday. Get out to Bill Curry Ford. Start shopping. Test drive. But, of course, you can do that all online. And just even check out the dealership. It is that impressive. If you're just cruising down Dale Mabry, go take a look. So we're going to take a 10-12-minute break from the regular podcast and go to our interview with Dave Canales at the NFL Scouting Combine. The former Bucs offensive coordinator sat down with me, Lee, and the Sage on Radio Row. And he, you know, shed some light. He was candid and, as always, relaxed. We know him pretty well. I was texting him that morning, bugging him, and I appreciate him taking the time with us at the Combine. Here he is, Dave Canales. All right, so as promised, here's Dave Canales. No longer the Bucs play caller, Ira. It is just, it's sad. It's
I feel abandoned, you know.
Yeah,
you
got married to the fans of Tampa, Dave, and you left.
Well, you know what they say, absence makes the heart grow fond, you know. So,
but congratulations, an amazing rise. I know you're dealing with the journey and the excitement, but do you have a thought for Bucs fans that maybe you'd want to share after reflecting on the time? For this fan specifically, maybe, you know, those you've met and encountered and the whole experience.
Oh, just gratitude. You know, I think I was just shown a lot of grace, a lot of patience as we really became, you know, something to be proud of. You know, we took some lumps, you know, throughout the season. And, you know, we kind of came out right off the bat and people were talking about the Bucs 3-1, you know. But then we saw middle of the season where we said, hey, you know what? We are not as good at football as we think we are, guys. We got to get our fundamentals right. We got to get our run game right. And to really just walk that journey with Bucs fans, to see a rushing game that improved by 20 yards per game by the end of it, you know, and still kick myself. I still owe Goody dinner because we took a couple knees in Green Bay. We were at 101 yards, took a few knees, and we could have broke the franchise record of 4 games straight with 100 yards rushing.
Ooh.
And so that one hurt, so I'm going to have to go find a nice spot for Goody to be able to make up for that one. But I think, you know, just to watch us grow, to watch us become something, you know, with Baker being there, and the whole group really, you know, playing good football down the stretch, you know, and winning a playoff game, going up and giving everything we had in Detroit, yep. you know, in a hostile environment, but to really make it a one-score game by the end, and we're knocking on the door. So, anyway, just a lot of appreciation for that journey, you know.
And just one moment I wanted to ask you about specifically, and we talked earlier today to Jason Light about it, yeah. Todd Bowles.
You're obsessed with this fourth and one play.
It moved my whole world, my life. Fourth and one.
Fourth and one in Atlanta.
The crowd is going crazy. The season's on the line in yeah. many ways. Yeah. Jobs are on the line, careers, the whole direction of the franchise. What was that moment like for you, and can you reflect on it a little bit?
Oh, it was horrible because we missed the block up front, and Rashad White's getting tackled for a two-yard loss and somehow shakes it and goes and gets the yard we needed. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the whole thing kind of flashed in front of us. But I also think goes back to that commitment to the run game. It was the final drive of the game in what was, you know, really a two-minute drill, and we ran the ball five times, you know, and because of what they were giving us, you know. And so the belief, the attitude, the group really being able to do that and attack them, and then to go all the way down and to call a play that we had practiced a million times feels so good when you just know the call. It's like, all right, it's this. And Baker's like, great. You know, and Cade Otten's in the end zone, you know, for a touchdown. And so
was that all your call? Did Coach say run the ball, or did he just leave it to you? Or other than – did he say anything other than go for it?
In that last
– Yeah, in that
on
one
the fourth
play,
and one, yeah.
That big fourth
no,
and one.
No, that was just – that was the right call for the situation, you know. And I think that if you organize your call sheet well enough, you don't second guess, you know, the quiet solitude of your office with a cup of coffee and then serene and your favorite song playing, and you design it that way, is you got to trust that guy, you know. Don't trust the guy who's in full emotional panic, you know, in a game type of situation. So everyone was on the same page in that regard. But I will say at the half, you know, we go into the locker room, and Coach Bowles was like, hey, for once we have the advantage up front. Let's get after these guys. And Goody was right there walking with me, and Goody was like, hey, trust it.
Yep.
Call what you call. Do whatever it takes to win.
You won the physical battles that day.
That's right. And that was one of the few games that we were able to do that. So,
Dave, what's your biggest takeaway from your first year as an offensive coordinator that you can apply to being a head coach?
I think working with the staff, I think maximizing the abilities and talents of your staff. That's a huge one.
So trusting your staff?
Absolutely. And so you trust them because you taught them. So teach the staff well and let them do their jobs. And then all of a sudden, the whole thing's, you're not relying on just your brain. There's 10 brains you're relying on in these situations to build a great game plan because you value their input, because you listen. And so they continue to give you things when they see that product come to life on the field. You know, it really gives them skin in the game. So I think now taking that to the next level with an offense, defense, and special team staff, operations and all those things is like, okay, here's what I'm looking for. Here's how I want it to feel. Here's how I want to do business with each other. Now go and do that, and then I'll check in with you as we all, you know, pursue that and achieve that together.
If I told you a year ago, Dave, honestly, Dave, in 2024, you're going to be a head coach in the National Football. You're going to have one of those 32 jobs. Would you have said I was crazy? It happened fast.
I would have said, you're crazy. I'd love to try it.
It happened fast, but it wasn't fast because you've been in this league for a long time.
14
so
years.
So it's not like you're a neophyte to this league.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, and that's I've felt ready for the opportunities. I won't say ready. Nobody's ready. I'm not ready for figuring out how to be a head coach who's calling plays and making game management decisions. Like, that's, I need help. But I was ready to take a shot. And as ready as you're going to be, you know, to be able to learn the lessons that you got to learn, and, you know, no other way than just hop into it and get those live rounds, you know.
Dave, I think this speaks volumes, not just for you, but for the other coaches. And by the way, you don't have a posse here. You don't have a staff. You have a court. What, is 9 people with you? Gee, me, Christmas. So anyway, a year ago this time, Joe Gilbert, Harold Goodman, barely knew your first name. Now they're working for you in Carolina. What's it say about you, or what's it say about your trust in them that you won them? Because we heard today they were offered contracts to return to the Bucks. They chose to go with you.
They covered me. They had my back. From the time I got there, these were guys who were helping me make the transition into working for Todd Bowles. He really likes this. He's really looking for this. When he says this, he's telling you. When he says it like this, he's making a suggestion. All of those little things, all of that translated for me is like, these guys really got my back. They really want me to do well. They want me to have success. And then for us to grow together and to become the offense that we became, to see those hard days, to face those challenging press conferences, you know, where we had some games where it's like, whew, you know, we're eking out these points and trying to find a run game and all that, but to watch us do it together and become something. And really to do it with a lot of love and respect, you know, and really listening to each other and really working at the problem well, you know, finding solutions, you know, was really being committed to the solution, not being committed to the ego of, well, he didn't call my plays or these guys aren't coaching my plays well. I was like, all right, these aren't working for us. How can we improve this together? And that commitment to each other really led them to a great relationship by the end of it, where it's like, man, I can really picture, you know, doing this with them, you know, if it's an option. So,
hey, Coach, last question for me, and we know you're on a time limit. Appreciate you doing this, and you know, you're after today, we have to hate you because you're the Panthers head coach. It's just the way it is. But you know, coaches always talk about knowing the other team and knowing guys they played with, played against. So, what is this going to be for you when you're game planning against that Bucs defense next year? How much do you think you can really take advantage of that in all seriousness?
Yeah, I honestly think it's I think ignorance is bliss, because I know those guys and the young talent that's on the Bucs defense, and I saw them make some fantastic plays and see them play really good football down the stretch. So I'm very optimistic. I don't know if you noticed that by
now. Sure,
So when I every week when I go into a game, I look at the opponent, and it's really hard for me to see how we're just going to dominate. I really see the talent that they have over there.
So you see their optimism.
Yes. And so, like, I see the best in this pass rusher. I see the best in this defensive back who's I've seen make incredible plays. I wish I wouldn't have seen that clip, you know. And so it's the same thing to be able to practice against those guys, you know, in Tampa on a regular basis and to know, like, what we're going against. But I also know that that level of respect makes me regard them highly. So then I take it seriously. And we make sure we do our due diligence, and we make sure we really dig deep and try to – you know, make sure we're as sound as possible going against the structures, and hopefully I'll be able to pull from the experiences and, you know, just kind of the ebb and flow of those move the ball periods, you know, and to really see what a Todd Bowles defense can look like, you know, with live bullets with the you know, with the clock moving in practice situations is it's all you can handle. So but hopefully that'll prepare us, you know, for what could happen as we go into
last one for me, Dave, and then Lee might have one. Dave, now that you're looking back, you're out of the organization, you can tell us the truth. How rough was the midseason tailspin when you dropped us 4-7?
Yeah.
And how'd you get out of it?
It was really rough. From a personal standpoint for me as a first-time offensive coordinator, you know, after the second loss in our four-game losing streak, after the second loss, I really struggled. You know, I was starting to question, like, am I doing the right thing?
You're a first-time coordinator.
Absolutely.
You know.
And but I had to remember what all the other coaches, what all the guys with a lot of wisdom around me have said, just make it about the football. Just what are the fundamental breakdowns in this thing? And so I really just went there. And I said, okay, guys, 1-0 mentality with a chance to win the division. Is it still true? It is. Okay, let's attack the fundamentals. And it just became a broken record. And that, you know, 6 out of 7.
Yes,
four straight and 6 out of 7. But I had to be committed to it. I had to be dogged to that approach and that belief, because that's really all we had. There is no other way.
It could have fallen apart.
Absolutely. And there's no other way to spin that story other than to attack the fundamentals. And it taught me a huge lesson going forward as a head coach. We're going to see hard days, and we got to be committed to fundamental improvement. Let's go 1-0 with a chance to win the division. Can we keep that mentality? How long can we be committed to this thing better than the opponent? And see what happens.
Dave, thanks for helping turn around the Tampa Bay franchise, because you have a piece of this, of our success here, which we always appreciate that. That's it. I guess this is goodbye. And
best of luck in Charlotte, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Only 2 weeks of the year we got to hate you. The rest of the time, we're your biggest fans in Tampa.
That's right. Well, I'll bring you some strawberry bread from Alessi on the 2 weeks.
Very good. I'm all for that.
Great stuff there from former Bucs offensive coordinator Dave Canales, live with us at the NFL Scouting Combine on Radio Row. I don't recall hearing him having some sort of formal sit down with any other Tampa Bay media. We'll just leave it at that. Now let's get back to the regular podcast. We have got a lot of Mike Evans stuff to dive into after getting into all kinds of stuff on Baker Mayfield, really going deep. Let's get at it. And remember, Florida's Elite Restoration, your first phone call whenever you have a disaster at your property. Don't wait. Don't delay. They are there for you. Get that free evaluation. Tell them the Sage sent you, and you'll get $500 back if you need their services. Floridaselite Restoration.com. Ira, an important question as it relates to Mike Evans, because I got this email from the Buccaneers ticket office, and the subject line is, and it was right after the news conference yesterday, Mike Evans is a Buck for life, ! With a huge graphic of Evans saluting, and then it says Buck for life, and it says Bucks extend Mike Evans, join him at Raymond James Stadium this season, blah, 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 buy tickets. So Buck for life, Buck for life. Well, I'm confused because, and that phrase came up a couple of times at the news conference. Mike Evans, however, is saying he wants to play 5 or 6 more years and thinks he can do it at a high level. So what is this Buck for life nonsense? Why are they trying to sell us a bunch of crap when the guy himself says, man, I want to play at least 5 more years and he's in great shape. It's a 2-year deal. Why is it a 2-year deal, Ira, and not a 3 or 5 year deal with a bunch of options that could sort of make him a Buck for life if they gave him some sort of unique 5-year deal? What is going on here, Ira?
Steve, you answered your own question, Stevie. They're trying to sell tickets. And Lee, Buck for life, when it comes to number 13, it's got a nice ring to it. Hey, you know, let's pony up for a couple of years on the tickets. Look what they did for Evans. They did right by him. Buck for life. Lee, it's very presumptuous. Now, Mike Evans said to me, Lee, in the Buck locker room towards the end of the season, and we were talking about the Hall of Fame, and he knows I'm the representative, and he says, you don't have much to do right now, Ira, right? I said, no, I'm waiting on you. I said, you know, you're going to play another 5 or 6 years, and then you got to retire another 5 years. He looked at me, Lee, and he said, I'm not playing more than 3 or 4 years. Now, he changed his tune yesterday in that auditorium, said he feels great, the best he's felt in 5 years after a season. Lee, this Buck for life, it's very presumptuous. I don't think necessarily it's true. If the guy's 32 or 33 and hitting, you know, potentially hitting free agency again, there's no guarantee that Jason Light will ink him to another deal, Lee, and he might not think he's finished. So I don't see it, Lee. This Buck for life thing, I think it's a misnomer. You know, if it's a 5-year deal with some out clauses, maybe it's a Buck for life, but he surprised me, Lee, by saying he might play another 5 or 6 years. I was not prepared for that.
Yeah, he was saying just how good he feels, how healthy he feels. He said, "What, this is like the best he's felt since 2016, I think he said.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he still communicates with Brady, and he said the best thing he ever did was go on his TV12 thing, and he said it's been a game changer for him. So I thought the same thing that Steve said, that, okay, they're talking Buck for life, and Evans is talking about, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 6 more years. Yet he signed a 2-year contract. What's going on?
Yeah.
it's mixed messages, man.
Steve, I'm thinking about trying, you know, instead of the TB12, Steve, the TB12 regimen, I'm thinking of the KFC 11. What do you think, Steve?
Baskin Robbins.
yeah, Baskin Robbins, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's a good one, Ira. That's a good one. Well, you know, you look at Evans, Ira, and if he has 2 more 1,000-yard seasons, so, and I'm just doing the quick math here, if he has 2,025 yards in the next 2 years, that's all, 2,025 total, he will pass Julio Jones, assuming Jones retires, on the all-time list. He'd move into 16th on the all-time list. Now, Evans keeps saying he wants to be remembered as one of the greats. And if you want to be remembered as one of the greats, you know, you better be top 10 in several categories, or at least a couple of categories. And receiving yards, if you look at the top 10, he probably needs 3 to 4 more years to get into the top 10 if he can continue to produce. And he's very high on the touchdown scale already. And I know he wants those 100 touchdowns. So I don't know, Ira, what he's got 94 right now. 100 would put him in elite territory. I don't think he's laying it down anytime soon. And the contract, you know, a lot of people thought he would have gotten more money. Turns out the contract wasn't as lucrative as they thought. One comment that Jason Light made yesterday, and to answer your question, Ira, you know, we don't run a Mickey Mouse outfit over here. Of course, as soon as Jason Light was finished talking, Lee sent me the audio. I listened to it 17 times, and I knew what was going on. But one thing that Light said was he was asked about Chris Godwin renewing him. Hey, you know, Godwin is entering a contract year. You don't want to end up in the same situation you were with Mike. And Light very much shut it down and said, it's the furthest thing from my mind right now. We got much more bigger things to worry about. He didn't say we want Chris to be a buck for life. We'll figure it out.
I'm not surprised by that, Steve. I mean, he's got a lot on his plate. Even Levante David, Lee, I think he's critical because we all know Devin White ain't coming back. That ain't happening. And yeah, you know, KJ Britt's a good run stuffer, but he's not a blitzer. I think David's a priority. Winfield's a priority. Winfield's going to sign an extension. It's going to happen. It might not happen till the summer, but it's going to happen. He doesn't have anything to prove, Lee, to Todd Bowles, Light, or the Glazers. Winfield, that's a place mark, that franchise tag. He's going to be extended. Worbster's going to be extended. Those are priorities, you know, in the months, you know, ahead. I don't think Godwin is front and center. Now, he's a very good player, Lee. He's very good, but he's not great. He's not, and he doesn't score enough touchdowns. For my taste, I don't know what the problem is in the red zone, but the guy's finishing with 3 and 2 touchdowns. Lee, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable for that kind of money. I know there's more to the games than touchdowns, but you can't get around scoring, Lee. You can't get around reaching the end zone. Evans is great at it, and Godwin isn't very good at it. At least he hasn't been the last few years. I don't think Godwin's a priority for this organization right now. They feel they could, they have to get a number two if they keep Evans. Around for 3 or 4 years, they can get a good number two. Godwin's not a priority at this point, Lee. He's just not.
Be careful dismissing Godwin. Bucks offense opened up last year when they finally got Wise, started getting him the ball when he played in the slot. He may not be scoring touchdowns, but he's pretty damn critical for this team. Don't trivialize Godwin. He's very important in this offense. Very important.
Well, he's under contract, Lee. He's under contract.
Yep.
You can't pay everybody. You know that.
Maybe I'm hearing you wrong, Ira, but your connotation is, the Bucks can be okay without him. I don't think so. At least evidence support that.
Lee, in the past you have said, you know, paying two receivers, $45 million between them, it puts a little stress on you. And it does, especially because you're not getting your quarterback for $4 million this fall, probably. look, I'm not knocking Chris Godwin, Steve, but he's got to reach the end zone. I mean, I think it's a problem right now.
Well, I don't know if that's his fault. You know, there's a lot of factors with that. He's an excellent player. You know, we don't even have to say it. There's 4 out of the last 5 years. He's busted 1,000 yards. In 2020, he may have been having one of his best seasons and got cut short with the cheap shot injury. He's recovered well from that. So, I mean, I don't know, but it is possible the Bucks may look at him and say, you know what? We just don't want to pay two 20 million plus receivers. Godwin, you can't catch the deep ball. You're going on 29. We're moving on. I think the biggest tell possibly that we may have is if the Bucks somehow draft a receiver in round 2 this year, that's going to set off a bunch of fire alarms that this guy is going to be the heir apparent to someone.
I agree. Now, they do have other needs, Lee.
Yeah.
And by the way, Lee, while I'm pissing off Buck fans by suggesting that they might draft the quarterback at 26, I'll add another layer to it. If there's no quarterback that they're, you know, very high on at 26 and they stay at that spot, Lee, and this will drive you crazy, Lee. Don't drop the phone on me. Don't hang up. I'm not opposed to drafting a center, Lee. I'm not at 26. If I can get maybe the first or second best center in the draft instead of the eighth best pass rusher, I'm not opposed to it. I'm not.
You've been hitting a man of Shevitz already this morning, Ira.
I think they need an upgrade at center, Lee. I just think so.
I'm not opposed to that, but maybe it's just me. First round, you want an impact player. Jiminy Crescent, everybody screams about Robert Hainsey. they were two plays away from going to the NFC Championship game. How bad was he? You know, but you want an impact player. That means defensive end, yeah. They don't need tackles, so you don't have to go there. A linebacker, possibly? You know, let's think about this. And you kind of glossed over this a little earlier, and I think it needs to be flushed out more. Flush, F-L-U-S-H-E-D. People say flesh, no flushed. When I say that, I picture flushing a covey of quail out of the brush so you can shoot him. That's what I'm thinking so far. Not flushed, flushed, for the grammar geeks out there. The Bucs potentially, and I emphasize, I underline this word like eight times, boldface type, 85-point font, potentially, the Bucs had a top five inside linebacker duo. If the Bucs don't re-sign Lavonte David, they go down to a bottom five inside linebacker. Kenny Britt's okay, just okay. He's limited. That's why he wasn't starting over Devin White. And, you know, Devin White, who knows what got into his head. When, that's why I say potentially. If he would have played to his potential, arguably the Bucs had the two best inside linebackers in the game. Arguably. If, again, potentially, if they don't re-sign David, bottom five. So, yeah, I kind of think linebacker is pretty important right now.
No question about it. I think David's coming back. I don't see him playing for another team. I just don't see that. If you're going to play, you play with Todd Bowles, who loves you and puts you in position to succeed. I think Britt's better than just a guy. I think Lee's a short-change in Britt. Yeah, he's not a great cover guy, but David is.
Yeah, there you go. Britt's a good run stopper, but it's a passing league.
I understand, but you've got David, you know, dropping into coverage, and he excels at it. I think David's coming back, but if he doesn't, Lee's point is correct.
Yeah, as it stands now, I'm sure the Bucs would say, hey, you know, we've developed Britt and we like Servasi Dennis and we got this free agent for $3 million that we really think is can fit in, you know, Bowles years ago. Well, I won't even go there. But, yeah, look,
who was it that Light was talking about was such a warrior on the practice squad?
I don't think
it's worth mentioning on this podcast, Lee. I just don't.
Yeah, you'd have to narrow that down. All right, so Lee, Ira, look, Sage, we heard earlier in this podcast, we took that little break, and we heard from Dave Canales, a nice little goodbye there. That was fun. Sage, now I'm going to turn it over to Tony Grossi, who you sat down with, talking all things Baker Mayfield. I think it's a good time to look at some of the negatives on Mayfield as Grossi saw it, and, of course, kind of his mea culpa and all that. Here he is, Sage, with Tony Grossi. Longtime Cleveland reporter at the NFL Scouting Combine.
Our guest today is Tony Grossi, a Cleveland legend, has covered the Browns for many, many years, doing a lot of radio now, Tony?
Yes.
I imagine.
Talking and writing about the Browns.
How many years at the Cleveland paper?
Well, I was at the Cleveland Plain Dealer for 30-plus years.
30-plus years.
And I've been 10 years at ESPN Cleveland and our subscription site, thelandondemand.com.
Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. How many years, Tone?
I think I'm getting near that 25-year anniversary.
You're a little ahead of me, baby.
Definitely over Beautiful. 20 years now.
Tony, we want to talk a little bit about Baker Mayfield.
Sure.
Obvious first question. How surprised were you that he had some success last year?
I'm surprised in the fact that he had such a great year. I thought he had his best year as an NFL quarterback. He obviously got great coaching. It was the perfect situation for him. They had that big target for him that he knows, Mike Evans. And you got to give him credit. He turned around his career when it looked like it was, you know, at a turning point, and he made the right turn.
You think there would be a considerable interest on him in the free agent market if the Bucs don't re-sign him?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the benefit of what he did is he restored his stature as a NFL winning quarterback. I mean, it's not easy to take a team to the playoffs, and he was able to do that. Yeah, I think there's enough turnover in coaching. That always means turnover in quarterbacks too. So I think he would find a home, whereas a year ago, you know, I don't know, beyond Tampa, what there was for him.
Is he a guy, Tony, from what you can determine about being around him, that him and his agent are going to take the top offer, or is the fact that he's comfortable in Tampa, is that a factor in the Bucs' favor?
It should be. I don't know what they're thinking, but it seems to me he sacrificed a little bit last year to be signed by Tampa. You know, the cliche is he always bets on himself. He did again, and he won. So I'm not sure what that means in contract negotiations, but if I were him, at this stage of his career, the opportunity, the situation should be priority one rather than top dollar. But that's me speaking.
Tony, briefly, give our readers and listeners an overview of the arc of his career in Cleveland.
Well, I gave him credit for doing something that no Cleveland quarterback had done in 20-plus years, and that was win a game on the road in the playoffs. And he did it in Pittsburgh, of all places, where Cleveland quarterback hadn't won in 15 years. So you can never take that away from Baker. He excited the market, and then it went south.
What was the hype about him coming in as the number one pick, Tony?
Well, I was against him. He knows that. I didn't think he was worthy of the number one pick. I always thought he was an overachiever, which is a compliment. I thought being a number one pick, I had a different vision of, course, strapping.
You're John Elway, yeah.
I'm a size guy, okay? Others aren't. Fortunately for him, John Dorsey wasn't concerned about that.
What happened his first year? What was his first year in Cleveland like?
His first year is he relieved Tyrod Taylor in the second or third game, won a game against the Jets and Sam Arnold on a Thursday night, and boom, it ignited the city. A nice comeback win for him, and then he took the job from there in and played pretty well. Then he suffered through a coaching change, which is never good for a young quarterback.
Talk about him trying to play through that injury, Tone, in 2020.
Yeah, that was a kind of a weird thing where, you know, I always felt at the time that if he was really that hurt and it was affecting the way he played, he shouldn't have played. Because the team was right in the thick of a playoff chase, and they kept trotting Baker out there. Baker always wanted to play, but I thought at some point the coach or the team.
What was their other option at quarterback?
It's hard to remember now. Case Keenum, I think, who knew Kevin Stefanski's offense and could win a game in relief.
But they kept trotting Mayfield out there.
Yeah, and I think it hurt, and his play was affected by that injury. And they owed it to the rest of the team to get a guy in there who could play to the 100% of his abilities.
Did the fans turn on him at that point?
Some fans turned on him. I think some teammates turned on him. You know, there's the Odell Beckham episode with his dad putting that video out there that just submarined, I thought, Baker's ability to lead the locker room. And I think the locker room got divided as a result. Odell was just a loved player in the locker room. He is everywhere. And when Odell turns on you, or his dad turns on you, and Odell doesn't say, no, that's not me. I mean, he didn't do that. When Odell turns on you and you're the quarterback, man, that's a tough situation. And that to me, Ira, when I look back at it, caused his demise more than the injury, was the fracture in the locker room and his ability to lead and have the confidence of all this. Then I think he lost some confidence in the way he was playing because of the injury. So those two factors go hand in hand.
Did you feel, Tony, even from the beginning coming out of college, that he had a chip on his shoulder even back then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they all do, but he wore on his sleeve. He wore his chip on his shoulder on his sleeve. Right?
And what was that
to
based from?
To mix metaphors.
Well, what happened?
Well, he was always... That's what I mean. He overachieved. He was always, you know, his history. He left, where was it, Texas Tech, walked on at Oklahoma, and became their starter at a major program and won the Heisman. So no one would have projected. He wasn't a five-star recruit, right? I don't even know what star he was. But because of his size, he was always looked upon as a overachiever, and he did overachieve every step of the way. And like I said, I thought he's overachieving right now in the NFL.
We talk about his feistiness, Tony, you know, giving up his body instead of going out of bounds. He's trying to get an extra yard that rubs off on the teammates. Was that there from the start with him? Did he play like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's part of that chip on the shoulder, and that's part of why teammates love him too, I think. But at some point in your career, you got to smarten up a little bit, you know, and know when to take your hits and when not to. And I think he will. He's maturing as a player. I think that comes with maturation. But yeah, that's part of his driving force for him, right?
Yeah. You know,
it's part of his aura with his teammates. He was always loved at Oklahoma. He was loved in Cleveland by his teammates until that Odell episode. And I'm sure he's loved in Tampa because you want to love your quarterback because you want him to lead you.
Tony, he's not going to sign for $4 million again. We all know that at this table. Would the Bucs be taking a risk, Tony, giving him a 3 or 4 year deal? And do they have a choice at this point?
Yeah, I'm right there. I don't know if they have a choice. I think it's the perfect situation for both to continue their relationship, the Bucs and Baker. I don't know what that number is, Ira. I would be more concerned with the duration of the contract than the dollar figure. If I were the Bucs, 3 years sounds fine with me with Baker. I don't know what the Baker side has in mind, but I don't think they're going to get back any money this time around because he earned it.
Last question, Tony. Thanks for your time. How do you, you know, in 2 years, and we're talking about Mayfield 2 years from now, Lee said that he saw a chart where they had him as the 20th. They had Anthony Richardson at 16 and they had Mayfield at 20 and Richardson hasn't done anything in this league. So 2 years from now, you know, what are we talking about? Maybe a little better than average NFL quarterback?
Listen, he's always going to be ranked behind the guys who have more physical skills, right? More physical stature, ability, speed, strength. He can't run away from defensive ends at the NFL like he did at college. They catch up to – they gain on him.
Yes.
So at some point, I always thought that position needs the physical skill. You know, you need the strapping guy to take the hits. You need the arm. He's got a good arm. So I think he'll always be considered middle of the pack. And that's why, I mean, he's overachieving to even get to the middle
of the pack. But he has some intangibles.
So. Yeah, yeah. But in the NFL, you really need both, right? Tangibles and intangibles. I mean, I'm not saying the biggest, hardest thrower is the best quarterback. He needs the dose of the intangibles.
You got the Drew Breeses of the world. Yeah, you know.
So, but I think he'll, in answer to your question, I think he'll always be considered middle of the pack because of his physical stature. And we'll see. You know, Drew Brees took it all the way. He's the last one I can think of that similar size, you know. Yeah. And I think Baker's in a better situation in Tampa. I think weather helps him there, although he had no problem throwing in Cleveland and in the AFC North.
But bottom line, it's in the Buck interest to bring him back.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a perfect marriage right now. Why fix something that's not broke?
Thanks, Tony. Tony Grossi.
All right, Ira, you have one thought out of that interview? I think it stands on its own, but you have a thought to share as we head out of here?
I do. I have an anecdote, and I don't know if you guys have heard this one, but it is a classic, and I regret it. I made a mistake, but I knew the relationship between Mayfield and Tony Grossi. And Mary Kay Cabot also covers the Browns extensively. And Mayfield's no fan of either one. And I knew that. In fact, Grossi called him a midget one time and got in a lot of trouble. I think he got suspended for it. So, Steve, fairly early in the season, after a Buck victory, I can't remember what game it is. Maybe it was the New Orleans, it might have been the Bears game, like week two or something. Well, anyway, Mayfield played well, and the Bucs won the game. Mayfield was at the podium, and then when we went in the locker room, he eventually came in the locker room. And I walked past his locker. I don't know what made me say this. Lee, sometimes I get a little impulsive. And I said to Mayfield, "Hey, Tony Grossi just texted me and said you played a good game." I did. I said it. I made it up. The whole thing was made up. And Mayfield's demeanor... And, of course, he was in a great mood until the sage brought him down. And he looked at me and said, "You can tell Tony Grossi for me to take that stick out of his ass." And then he grumbled, and I toddled off to talk to Tristan Wirfs or somebody. I learned right then and there, Lee, about some of the origins of that chip on his shoulder. You know, came from in part from the Cleveland media. But I'll say this to Tony Grossi, Lee. You were sitting right there when we talked to him. I thought Grossi was very objective and right down the line. Didn't take unnecessary pot shots at Mayfield, even though those two guys had a lousy relationship. I respect Grossi for being a big boy and not letting any personal feelings get into his evaluation. And he said Mayfield had a heck of a season.
I thought he was incredibly fair. He was Grossi. I thought he was incredibly honest, objective. He explained why he wasn't a big Mayfield fan. It made sense. His idea of a number one quarterback, yeah, you have to be John Elway. And I can't argue with that. So I thought he explained himself. I thought he was very fair. I thought he was honest. I thought he was objective, which is what a good journalist should be. And so I'm tip of the cap to Tony Grossi.
He's 67 years old, Ira, a young man, just a young man there. Looks pretty good, too. So I like the sage. He is forging ahead with his stellar career. Ira, hopefully we have some interesting stuff to talk about next time, as in a new quarterback, or maybe not. I don't know, but it should be a wild podcast next time. Do you have a final goodbye for Bucks fans?
Well, I'm hoping, Steve, that we get together in the next day or two, because that would mean we got Mayfield news. Now I'm hoping he comes back, because I think that would make the Bucks more successful, and we want that at Joe Bucks fan. But I'm hoping, Lee, the three of us, we get the gang together in the next few days, because there could be some very positive news for Buck Nation.